Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
Swangled in
Portland. I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing and continued support. I know you've got a million options out there, like literally 2.8 million other podcast options. So the fact that you decided to spend your hour or so with me means a lot. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for everything. Thanks to our sponsors, too. True Hemp Science has been with us for a little while now. They're making the best hemp-based CBD out there. You just don't take my word for it. Try it yourself. You can go to truehempscience.com/macroaggressions and see what they've got cooking. The really good ones to get, the number 19 and the number 41, those types of CBDs, those will give you a little bit of extra energy. But there's a new product they've got called Bioactive Silicate. It comes in a little 2-ounce bottle, costs about $40. Add this to a gallon of distilled water, shake it up, and then drink about 2 ounces in the morning, 2 ounces at night. It'll really change the pH balance inside your body, which helps to kill bacteria and kill nanobacteria and detoxify the body. It helps with your joints. It helps with your tendons, even your hair. Although it doesn't work like that with me, helps to improve your sleep, your skin health, wrinkle prevention, all that stuff. It does quite a few things. So take a look. Just go read up on it. You probably never even heard of it before. It's called Bioactive Silicate. It's about $40 at truehempscience.com/macroaggressions. $150 or more, and they'll give you free shipping. And if you spend $65 or more, they'll throw in a bottle of number 81 distillate, which is like a $26 value. So, you know what? Take it. We love them. They've been great to us. I'm taking their products every single day, too, since they sent them to me. So I certainly do appreciate that. And hey, listen, I mean, I'm sorry. I know that this is the proverbial dead horse that we're kind of beating up on, but you got to get yourself ready. You got to get prepared in advance for what's coming. By this point, if you've been listening to this show for an extended period of time, you're probably sick of me talking about it, and I understand that. But for those of you that are new, and I know that this show is growing faster than I ever thought it would, look, the object of this show is to talk about things that the mainstream media isn't talking about, to get ourselves real honest about where we are currently and where things are going, and then do something about it. Proactive. You know, proactivity is what it's all about, not reactive. Anyone can watch MSNBC, feel scared, and react to that. What you really want to be doing is be proactive, know what's coming before it comes. You don't want to get into some sort of gladiator duel against some bastard who's got the last package of toilet paper, as we saw during COVID, or maybe is, you know, has the last bag of rice. So be proactive. Take care of this well in advance. You can go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. It's the landing page that was set up for us by My Patriot Supply, and they have got everything. You can really, if you're so inclined, you can sit down in your computer and in about 10 minutes, have it all sorted out. All your food, 4 week supplies of food, 3 month supplies of food, you can take care of all of that. Survival coffee, they've got it. You want water filtration, air purification, they have that. Camping gear, whatever. Power generation items, they have that too. They've got everything. They really do. And if you're already set up and prepared because you know what's coming and you don't want to be the last person to figure it out, well, who in your family doesn't have it figured out? You can always buy something and have it sent to them. You know, if you're so inclined, if you're nice, or maybe you're not nice, I don't know. If you're like, I've been tired of my aunt calling me a conspiracy theorist for the last time, I'll be damned if I'm going to send her any emergency food. She can eat rats for all I care, like it's North Korea. But in all seriousness, seriously, you've got family members, friends out there. They haven't figured it out yet. If you're so inclined, you can go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com and hook them up. They will thank you for it. They might even owe their lives to you at some point. I don't know. I don't like to talk about, you know, I don't like to talk about this stuff in a fearful way because I don't want us to be fearful. I think that that's probably the worst way to view this. I want us to be honest, though. And maybe, you know, getting honest about where you see things headed makes you a little fearful. That's normal. I'm a little bit fearful too, but I'm not going to let that cloud my judgment. And I want to get out in front of things. And in America, though, I would suggest it's not limited to America, but in America, our government loves emergencies. They love to keep you in fear. They love to keep you in a perpetual state of emergency for a variety of reasons. And that's really what we're going to talk about today, because the American government has created a never-ending state of emergency. It used to just be that back in the old days, you would hear, you know, dun, 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 breaking news, you know, and it would come on your TV. You'd be doing something else and you'd hear it kind of out, you know, from the other room and you'd go, oh, shit. Like the president just gets shot, you know, and then you go in and the president just got shot, you know, like John Hinckley, you know, shoots the president. And you're like, holy shit. That's what breaking news used to be. The media has bastardized that, of course, because they do everything. And now breaking news is there's a decision in the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. And you're like, seriously? This is breaking. This is life-changing, important news that I need to be scared into running towards my television for. It's preposterous. But it's because it's like a drug addict. You know, you can only, you know, it takes more and more to get you high. After a while, you start to build up a tolerance. We've built up a tolerance to insanity. Breaking news? Fucking president better be shot if I hear breaking news anymore. You know what I mean? I mean, not really, but it better be something serious is my point. And well, unfortunately, most of the time it's not really serious. It's just there to try to keep you in this suspended animation of fearfulness. And what that does is really mess up your mind. It creates very unhealthy places from which to make decisions. When you're in that fight or flight mode, you're going to be making short-term decisions that will get you out of the immediate danger, but it might set you up for a catastrophe the next day or weeks later. You cut off you're stuck in a bear trap. And so you saw off your right foot to get out of it. You've solved the short-term problem, but now you are going to have a long-term problem, which is you are no longer going to have a right foot. Now, to be fair, what were your other options? You probably would be dead if you didn't do that. So sometimes you have to make these short-term decisions in the fight or flight moment in order to get yourself to another scenario where then you can make different decisions. But it's very important for them to keep you in this state of fear, which is the reason why we're probably never coming out of a state of emergency. They refuse to end it. You know, and I think 9/11 put us into it. And as far as breaking news, you know, dun 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 goes, 9/11, totally legitimate as far as the justification for breaking news. I think just about everything after that has been questionable. But they kept us in this really low vibrational state of fear, starting at 9/11 and continuing till 5 minutes ago. I mean, it's still here. Because a lot can happen legally when you're in a state of emergency. It's not just a concept. It's not just some, it's not like a state of mind. I'm in an emergency state of mind. Maybe, but that's not what they mean. There's a legal definition to it. And there's some things that happen legally only when you are in a, quote, state of emergency. And these people know this. Like, the majority, the overwhelming majority of politicians in the United States are lawyers. They understand the power of words, the meaning, the why you use one word over another one, why you use certain terms, and what they technically mean. Not what you think they mean, but what they mean from a legal standpoint. And with a state of emergency in America, too much power has been granted to these politicians. Too little oversight is administered. Too many people have become dependent on it. They're addicted to it. Frankly, the politicians don't know how to govern without it, without the state of emergency. You know, there's a whole lot of steps and hurdles and things that you need to do to make, to go from where we currently are 1 minute to enacting laws that restrict freedom and flexibility and travel and all kinds of things. There's a procedure, but if it's a state of emergency, you get to skip all that nonsense and go straight to the final outcome, which is we just make it happen. And of course, the politicians in Washington are there for a variety of reasons, none of them good, but they're there because they're power hungry or narcissistic or psychopathic or predatory, ego driven. I mean, very few of them actually want to get in there and do something good. Or maybe if they did, they got drummed out of there after their first cycle. You know, they went there with the best of intentions, saw how filthy it was and went, there's nothing I can do here. I'm going to put a Band-Aid on a guy that's bleeding out. There's no point. So the politicians in Washington have just become really conditioned to use these shortcuts like states of emergency as a form of governing. And look, they offer amazing protection to politicians. You know, it gives them the ability to enact unilateral decisions, meaning they just get to decide what's going to happen, and then it happens. There's no debating in Congress, or we're going to have this House subcommittee to take a look at it. We're going to bring in these experts. We're going to talk about it. We're going to interview this person. What do you think about that? What do you think about it? All that shit goes away. They don't need to worry about that. We're doing it. It's done. State of emergency. Remember, we go to the front of the line and we bypass it. So there's no debate. There's no scrutiny. You just fast track authoritarian ideas under the guise of saving people during an emergency. You know, we're all here to save you. That's what they say. But these emergencies never seem to end. Now, I'm not trying to say that there aren't legitimate reasons for there to be emergencies. Let's say you live in a rural area and there's a big brush fire that's coming your way, and the authorities say we are in a state of emergency, which allows us to just you know, immediately call up backup fire department crews from outside of the county, or allows us the authorization to activate the airplanes that can drop fire retardant or whatever. I mean, so in those cases, I'm all for it. You know, I understand where they're going for with it, and I understand why they're doing it. But fires come to an end. If in this fictional scenario that I'm creating, there was a real fire and they said, well, you know, we're going to call up, you know, we're declaring a state of emergency. We're going to call up all these external fire crews from other counties. We're going to bring in the plane to put all this out. And then the fire gets put out, and then they keep the state of emergency and they go, and we're going to take your farm and your house and this road and all this acreage here and that gigantic farm that you have. We're going to take that. You'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? You're not doing any of that stuff. Fire's over. They go, oh no, fire's over. But the state of emergency isn't. Now, that might sound far-fetched, and that might sound, you know, like some sort of weird fantasy, or, oh, you're just making some crazy analogy about this. Okay, maybe. But I'm going to get to a point in this podcast today where I start rattling off a list of executive orders that FEMA put forth, that the president has signed off on and has authorized, that allows them to do just that. So, yeah, I'm making a fake scenario about a fictional fire, but you would be stunned to see how real that actually can be. So we've got a different sort of variety of emergencies, right? They're not all the same. The unprecedented amount of power that gets shifted might be the same, but the reasons for doing so are a little bit different. Let's start with the first one. Start with this very vague public health emergency. Oh, public health emergency, you say? Like COVID, right? It's a public health emergency. Well, is it really? I mean, it's got a 99.98% survivability rate and a median death age of 80. Is that really an emergency? Like, it doesn't sound, it's actually, frankly, the odds sound pretty good. What about the emergency use authorization that came in the wake of the COVID emergency declaration? Well, you say, that's just because we need to hurry up with the vaccines. We just need to hurry up with the vaccines and clear out all that, you know, all the stumbling blocks to getting us there, you know, like research, development, testing, regulatory agencies reviewing it, testing it on animals, testing it on people, all that stuff. That just goes out the window. You know what else goes out the window with the emergency use authorization? Your ability to sue these companies. Isn't that convenient? Oh, because it's an emergency. You know, look, we just have to have these people come in and do whatever they need to do because it's an emergency. You can't be going around suing these good people. They're here trying to help you during a fucking emergency. You should be grateful, for God's sake, not plotting lawsuits. Oh, really? Well, what if the product that they're saving us with is actually killing everybody? What about that? Then can we sue them? The answer is no. Because it's an emergency use authorization. And that means you don't get the option to sue anybody in this scenario. Public health emergency. It's all under the guise of that. What about masks? What about mandating that you wear masks? The masks that on the side of the box say, this mask does not prevent the transmission of the COVID-19 coronavirus particles. Oh, God, it's so stupid. What about shutting down stores? It's a health emergency. You know, they sold it to us like, well, you can't go into that local hardware store and, you know, God knows you may have COVID for all you know. And then you go in that store and there's 12 other people in that store and you walk by all of them and you're trying to buy a box of nails. And what if you give those people your COVID? We can't have that. This is an emergency. God damn it. We're going to have to close all these stores. And you go, wait, you can do that? And they go, yeah, we can do that. And you go, oh, I didn't know that. I said, well, yeah, it's technically a public health emergency. We can do that. And you go, so you're going to, I feel like it's Office Space. So you're going to fire Michael and Samir and you're going to give me more money. No, you're going to close down the hardware store and the local ice cream store, but you're going to leave Walmart and Home Depot wide open. Yeah. Because it's an emergency. Correct. Yes. But you're only shutting down the small and medium-sized stores? That's right. Hell of an emergency, huh? I mean, look, we've gone over and over this, so there's no need in rehashing the insanity of the COVID dictates. But just, it's important that you understand that the reason why there even were insane COVID dictates is because public health emergency declaration. And then that starts a chain reaction where it authorizes the emergency use authorization for vaccines, which then makes it so that they don't have to get tested, which then makes it so that you can't, you know, they can be offered, they can be fast-tracked, they can skip all this testing. All sorts of things happen as a result of that designation. It wasn't done by accident. It was done by design. What about terrorism? What about an emergency because of terrorism? Like 9/11. What happens in the wake of a domestic terrorist attack? Well, what happens is you get the Patriot Act, and we're going to get into that in a minute. You get a big stack of papers, pre-written, of course, by PNAC, those maniac Republican Zionist douchebags that plotted 9/11. You get the Patriot Act, which was written in advance. It's over 1,000 pages that turns it turns America into the homeland, you know, just like the Germans did. And it turns the homeland into a battlefield. And when the homeland, meaning America, is a battlefield, and you do something that is against what the government wants you to do, then you become now, because of this emergency technicality, you become an enemy combatant on the battlefield. No different than if you had a fucking turban on and you were up in the mountains of Tora Bora with an AK-47 and a burro and they caught you there. They would consider you to be an enemy combatant on the battlefield and they would take you to Guantanamo Bay. In America, during this emergency where the homeland is a battlefield, if you decide that you want to call out the government and the media for doing the things that they do, and they deem you to be a threat to them, not because you have guns or anything like that, but because you have words and logic, or you write a book about it, they can deem you as a domestic terrorist and take you away from the battlefield in, I don't know, Albuquerque, New Mexico, or wherever the fuck you happen to be, and take you and put you in Guantanamo Bay. They can do that legally. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen to you, but it has happened. And they are within their legal right to do that. And they are within their legal right to do so because of the emergencies that then created the justification for the Patriot Act. And then the Patriot, always with the names, right? Oh, it's the Patriot Act, so patriotic, as it strips away all of your rights. Very patriotic. What about emergencies during civil unrest? George Floyd, anyone? Mostly peaceful protests? Be very, very careful about emergencies during civil unrest, because the rules go right out the window. I mean, in America, they did nothing. The police did nothing during civil unrest. But they can. Remember the 1033 program that recycled in more than $10 billion worth of military-grade hardware from the used in the military and recycled it back into the local police forces for just the cost of shipping and handling? Yeah, all of that equipment that's coming back to the homeland, the battlefield, is going into the hands of the police. And during these emergencies, guess who the domestic terrorists are? It's you and me. It's not the police. Not legally, at least. So during civil unrest, you can find emergencies being declared. Countywide, maybe citywide. But that can spread. And what happens in the wake of that? Curfews. We're going to shut down this. We're going to make it so that, you know, we shut down public transportation. We shut down, we enact curfews. We send patrols out at night. We monitor social media. Some Gestapo shit goes on. Frankly, some China stuff goes on. What about an emergency during an economic collapse? Well, we haven't gotten there yet, but you know, the day's not over. We're one major decision on the dollar being used as the world reserve currency no longer, and we're in an economic collapse. Then what happens? State of emergency. What happened to Occupy Wall Street? What happened? Do you remember Occupy Wall Street? You know when all those cops came in to break everything up? Those cops were paid by Citigroup. Citigroup said, we'll take care of the bill. Give us the bill. Just get in there and break up these fucking hippies, right? That are ruining our grift. What about a climate emergency? The very vague climate emergency. Now listen. If we get hit by an asteroid, God willing, I can understand you declaring a climate emergency, right? I can understand that. But what if it's just the hottest summer on record, the Midwest in a sweltering heat wave, heat watch 2022, you know, and it's all breaking news, all this stuff. Then what? Brownouts, where they intentionally turn off power plants so as to not, I don't know, provide power to people that need it at a time they desperately need it, you know, for their air conditionings and fans to be working and refrigerators and freezers and all that stuff. Climate emergency. And I'm not talking about a temporary one. What if it's not just heat wave that comes through or ice storms 2022 or whatever the boogeyman du jour is? What if it's just flat out, we're in a climate emergency forever until all these microscopic molecules of carbon are at a smaller amount up at the very, very top of the troposphere that you and I are never going to go check out, have no way to measure, and wouldn't know if they were lying to us. But that emergency stays in place while they're codifying ESG scores into law, talking about how internal combustion engines have got to be banned, getting rid of gas-powered weed whackers, you know, in California. It's already happened. That psychopath Gavin Newsom out there making unilateral decisions, you know, because of a climate emergency, a very vague term. It's not vague to the politicians. They know exactly what's going on. They understand why this is happening. They're told in advance that this is what we're going to do, which is the reason why all this legislation just happens to miraculously show up 5 minutes after these emergencies are declared. Maybe not technically 5 minutes, but look, in the case of Kathy Hochul in New York with the Buffalo shooter, It was 3 days before her legislation was being voted on and approved. Funny how that happens, right? It's almost as if she had it planned out in advance with the legislation. I'm not saying she planned the shooting. I'm saying the FBI planned the shooting, but I'm saying that she had advanced knowledge that there was going to be some event that was going to be used as the pretext and justification for her new laws that she can enact, and therefore the laws were written in advance. That's how you get them 3 days later. That's why the Patriot Act came out a week after 9/11. You think Karl Rove and Donald fucking Rumsfeld were there typing away all night long? No. No, they wrote Rebuilding America's Defenses, the new Pearl Harbor document, in September of 2020, a full year before. You think they didn't have the legislation going at that time too? Of course they did. Problem, reaction, solution. Climate emergencies, power rationing, right? During a climate emergency. We saw what happened in Texas with the ice storms that took down the power in parts of Texas for a couple days, I guess it seemed like maybe close to a week in some places. That's a real thing. I mean, that can be a legitimate, authentic weather event, right? That is not being manipulated by climate control operations or anything. Let's just say it naturally happens, which happens from time to time. They roll in their emergencies right on the back of that. And again, if you don't have an authentic or organic event happen, but you need to pass this legislation, then you make it happen through a false flag event. So we're not blind. We understand how this works. Forced shutdown of the grid. No travel during this climate emergency. And they'll frame it as you doing your part. And who doesn't want to do their part, right? If you're in a position where you can help out and not do something because it's going to make things easier for some other person who's in a bad spot, I'm all for that, you know? I'm a nice guy. I'm a nice person. I want to help you. I hold the door for people when they come, you know, you're going, I'm a decent guy. I want the people that are in the worst situation to be taken care of. I want that. And if we have a legitimate emergency, I want those people to be prioritized. I want them to be found and taken care of. And I want us to do the best that we can for them. But that's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about the American government's need, hell, their addiction to being in a state of emergency because of what that affords them in terms of a lack of oversight, fast-tracking their nonsensical and insane ideas, putting things into law that would rightly never, you know, would be debated out of existence. This is the problem with the American government is that they found out that we are willing to give up our rights and freedoms during times of scary emergencies. Therefore, they've decided that the best plan of attack is to constantly create scary emergencies so that we will continue to give up our rights and justify their existence as a government whom nobody really needs. So it's not accidental. What about in the wars too, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, they created emergency powers here in America too. So it's the Rahm Emanuel, never let a good crisis go to waste. And then my extension of that, my dot, dot, dot. And if a good crisis isn't there, then go ahead and make one up. So how are these new rules actually imposed? Well, there's a couple ways to do it. One is through executive orders. That's when the president just says, look, we're doing this. You know, he would love to rule by executive order always. And that's not a Democrat or a Republican. That's all of them. They all would love. It's easier. It allows them to be a dictator temporarily, but you have to have a justification for it. You have to have a real reason. So executive orders is one way to do it. National security directives is another way. You can do it through decrees, memorandums, proclamations. You know, some of these things are legal and some of them are not. Some of them carry the full weight of the American legal system, and some of them are suggestions that sound like their laws, but really aren't, like wearing a mask inside a store. You go, well, show me the law that says that. Like, well, you know, I mean, the CDC's memo says, you're like, yeah, yeah. Where's the law? Well, I mean, I have it right here in this proclamation. You're like, yeah, again, show me where it says in the rule book that I have to do this, that this isn't just some idea that you guys have had. The rules get imposed through the media. That's how you take a rule that's not really a rule and make it seem like one, is the use of the media. And that's a prime example of the masks. You know, you can, if you just listen to, if you watch TV enough or you watch the nightly news enough and you see these, the, you know, these experts talking about experts, you know, next thing you know, these rules are being adopted by the citizens and they're really not technically legally binding. But the herd has decided that they're all going to wear masks. And so therefore, everyone's like, you have to wear a mask. And again, what are you going to do? You're going to debate some guy at the checkout counter at Rite Aid who tells you have to wear a mask before you come in the store, and you're saying, show me the law. You know, it's not, that's pointless. But peer pressure plays a role in this, and confusion, you know, they can confuse and just outright lies. So they can lie to you and say, this is the way it's going to be. These new rules are imposed because it's now a law. And you go, oh, well, if it's a law, then I guess it's a law. It's a lie, not a law. That happens all the time, too. So restricting the right to travel due to imminent danger to the public health or the physical safety of United States travelers. That line right there. Imminent danger to the public health or the physical safety of United States travelers is why you can't go to Cuba, North Korea, Iraq, or Libya. Now, you may not want to go to any of those places at all. I want to go to Cuba big time. But this is part of it. They'd say, well, you know, we're restricting your right to travel. Well, I'm sorry, but I have a passport. My passport says I can go. And now you're telling me I can't? And they say, well, yeah, it's because of imminent danger to you. And we love you so much that we're not going to allow you to go there. It's ridiculous, of course. But this is how they do it. So here's a quote for you. Unforeseen economic collapse, loss of functioning political and legal order, purposeful domestic resistance or insurgency, pervasive public health emergencies, and catastrophic natural and human disasters. These are what you get with a national emergency declaration. I'm going to read this again. Unforeseen economic collapse, loss of functioning political and legal order. We should be so lucky to lose that. Purposeful domestic resistance or insurgency. Pervasive public health emergencies, COVID, and catastrophic natural and human disasters. Always under the pretext of national security. For your safety, as the Nazis used to say. Look, national emergency declarations wind up unlocking enhanced authorities. Okay. When you get a national emergency declaration, all of us, once you have that declaration officially, then it's like a video game. It unlocks all these superpowers that you get. And the superpowers are staggering. Only to be, you know, it's like in case of emergency, break. You know, you break and then you pull the thing and it's like, here's all these powers for you. And you're like, oh my God. The president can do anything. He can do anything during the, with these powers. As long as there's a national emergency declaration, they can be totally and completely and utterly out of control legally. So let's talk about the Patriot Act. It created obscene amounts of power for the federal government, just, and the president too, just an unbelievable amount of lateral movement on just about everything. Indefinite detention, homeland is a battlefield, all that stuff. What their ability to use, to hijack industries, to, I'm going to read through some of these executive orders. They're insane. You'll be like, this sounds fake. But the Patriot Act was basically, you know, look, let's say who it was. It was Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld who put that thing together. There were others that worked on it. I'm not going to pretend that it wasn't a group effort of those scumbags over at PNAC, but the main culprits, the guys that had worked together for decades, Cheney and Rumsfeld. Homeland is a battlefield, which means involuntary detainment, no trial, no habeas corpus. They can put you in Guantanamo Bay and they can label you a domestic terrorist. That's the Patriot Act. Pretty fucking patriotic, wouldn't you agree? It gave the government unilateral power that goes all, that just bypasses Congress. I mean, it gave some people in government that ability. And those people would be Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. So speaking of that George W. Bush administration, the ones that allowed, facilitated, and then exploited 9/11. The George W. Bush Presidential Library, yes, there is one, released 500 pages of 6,500 total pages through a FOIA request for the years 2006, 2007, and 2008. They found that there was no oversight from Congress during those years to what the Bush administration was doing, that the courts were essentially neutered, and that the public was excluded from knowing anything about it. They only released 500 pages. There's 6,000 pages that are deemed classified national emergency, you can't look at it, redacted, all that stuff. But just of the 500 that they did release, it was enough for people to conclude that it gave them basically no oversight from Congress at all. It's called the PEAD, Presidential Emergency Action Documents. And this is part of the continuity of government plan that was started under Eisenhower. So let's talk about continuity of government. And let me first state that, and I hate to send you elsewhere for this information, but I would be lying if I didn't say that there's somebody out there that has a real great understanding of continuity of government. Actually, two people. Daniel List from Dark Journalist, Dr. Joseph P. Farrell from Giza Death Star. They typically team up on shows and talk about COG and have recently. And I suggest that you go find it at Dark Journalist and watch some of it. It's the best information out there. They're really doing, they're so far down the rabbit hole, you know, you can't even see Daniel's shoes anymore. You know, he's way down there. And the information that he's bringing out is accurate and stunning. And it will cause you to sort of reevaluate your relationship with the government. And we're going to talk a little bit about, so COG, continuity of government. This is, what do we do if there's a nuclear war and the Russians launch a bunch of nukes and they hit Washington, D.C. and they hit New York City and they hit our shipbuilding areas and they hit, you know, whatever. They decapitate the brain, so to speak, of the American government. That's a joke in and of itself. But, what do we do, right? It's not the worst thought experiment to have, right? You sort of need to role play this stuff, especially when you're in the Cold War and you're talking about nuking Russia and Russia's talking about nuking you. And you think, well, what do we do if they actually do that? So the concept of continuity of government is, there's nothing nefarious about the idea. It's much like these drills that we talk about, planning for something and practicing and doing drills so that you're better for it. That's all good. The problem is when the drills line up suspiciously with events that wind up mirroring the drills almost identically. That's when you've got a problem. I have no problem with them talking about continuity of government, theoretically, or maybe even planning some legal, you know, reactions to this. But it's the wrong people, of course, that come up with this. Now, if we just randomly pulled 100 people out of the macroaggressions audience and said, you guys all seem logical and sane and you want to do what's best for this world, let's come up with a plan. I would trust you guys, but politicians in Washington, D.C. to come up with a plan for how to save all of us when they have shown over and over and over and over again that they hate us and have no respect for us. I'm sorry, but these are the wrong people to be planning what to do in the event of an emergency for us. So some of the sort of high-level aspects of continuity of government that you should be aware of. First of all, pretty important one, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights are immediately suspended. You take all the, you know, all those rights that you had, you can kiss them goodbye. We're in a emergency, don't you know? Martial law can and will be imposed. Indefinite detentions are a possibility, and I would say likely. Lockdowns, well, it might have been theoretical in 2019, the concept of lockdowns. Well, they might do that. They could do that, but they would never do that. They did it for a virus with a 99.98% survivability rate and a median death age of 80 years old. If we have just been hit by a nuclear missile, they will most definitely do that. Or the aliens are coming to, you know, just imagine. Here again, with what you know about how the government behaves on their best day, what makes you think that they're going to be any better on their worst day? Continuity of government, 9/11-like scenario? No. It allows them to bypass the courts, which they would love to do anyway. It offers an internet kill switch, which they will use. You get the ability to suspend habeas corpus, which they love. You can create a digital currency, which they're already working on. You can enact travel bans and restrictions, which we've already seen during COVID. You can seize businesses. Well, we've watched them shut them down. And you can repurpose businesses going, you make rubber tires for cars. Now we're going to need you to make rubber tires for these military trucks, whatever, you know, that sort of thing. And again, World War II, stuff like that, we saw samples of this. We saw facilities being repurposed for military use as opposed to civilian use. So it's not unprecedented. It is anchored in some reality of the past. But again, just when in general, when thinking of continuity of government, if you want to sort of get an idea of how it would work, just imagine there's a big event, and then Donald Rumsfeld becomes in charge of the world. That's all you have to do. You just go, good Lord, I'm not interested in that.
Right.
But that's what you'll get. Or Dick Cheney, you know. And if those guys are dead years from now, well, Rumsfeld is dead. But if Cheney's dead, you know, later, insert whoever your favorite boogeyman is in the government, because that's who will be in charge. The worst person, the worst group of people are set up legally to take this power. So, you know, it just makes you think, like, what could qualify as a national emergency? Monkeypox? I mean, don't laugh. It doesn't have to be reality. It doesn't have to be an actual national emergency. It just has to be perceived as one or legally one. Department of Justice under Trump was responsible for locking down people under COVID, shutting down small and medium-sized businesses, pushing mask mandates, and silencing opposition. That's Trump. That's the guy that's coming to save the day, according to some segment of the population. I wish I had that unrealistic belief. These people aren't coming to save you. That's not what they do. That's not their role. That's not their job. They don't come to save you. They're part of the problem. Now, this emergency, you know, this concept of a national emergency, well, let's expand on that just a little bit. What about an international emergency? International permanent crisis management. That's when you start to get the international organizations such as the United Nations and everything under that umbrella, which includes the World Health Organization and World Trade Organization, the World Bank, and all these things. If you think America likes a permanent state of emergency, why wouldn't these globalist maniacs like a worldwide state of emergency? World's police force. That's what America is. That's what these people at the UN are. World's police force, injecting themselves into everybody else's business. Starting preventable wars. Using the CIA for regime change. You know, we live in an international permanent crisis management world right now. NATO, we're watching NATO do this as we speak, drumming up a war between Ukraine and Russia. There's this assumption that I think we all make, at least early on we make it, and that is that these people in government and in these organizations are out there trying to prevent crises from happening. Or when one breaks out, they're trying to stop it. That's our assumption. It's an incorrect assumption. They want them to go. They want they want the crisis to become permanent. Much for the same reasons why American governments want the crisis to become permanent, because they get undue influence in those situations. And look, let's be fair. There's a lot of money to be made in this. A lot of money. Especially when you make the rules and then you run the companies that profit from the rules that you make. It's a big money maker. And the International Permanent Crisis Management Team has guys like Soros that are starting color revolutions all over the place. And, you know, early 2000s in Ukraine, or 2014 in Ukraine. Kyrgyzstan, Arab Spring, the Black Revolution of America in 2020, the Black Lives Matter, Soros-funded revolution. These are perfect for them. Keep turning up the flame just a little bit more. keep everybody in this state of fear. The longer we stay in a state of emergency, the more time they have to strip us of our rights. That's what they do. So I told you I would read some of these executive orders from FEMA. I mean, you've been warned. You're going to think that they don't, you know, they can't be real. They're real. Okay. The FEMA stands for the Federal Emergency Management Agency. All right. It's the executive arm of the police state, if you want to think of it like that. It's the president's toy, FEMA. Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job with that warehouse filled with bottled water pallets that you completely ignored and left there while people needed fresh water. But George W. said you're doing a great job, so I guess you are. The presidents use FEMA to perpetuate the state of emergency. FEMA's not there to fix things. If they were there to fix things, they wouldn't have hired Michael fucking Brown. That guy was incapable of fixing anything. So I think there's some things that you need to know right off the bat. And one thing in particular is that the conspiracy theory surrounding the idea and concept of FEMA camps, well, I've got some bad news for you. FEMA camps are very real. You don't have to take my word for it. You can look it up and find them. They're only hidden to the extent that you are not out there actively looking for them. But they're there, and they're very real. And they're operational, and they all have rail access. I mean, when you need to rail, when you need to fill the boxcars with people and move them from one place to another, you can do that with airplanes, but trains make it a lot easier. So you're going to find that all of the FEMA camps have rail access, and some of them even have runways for airplanes. So let's talk about this. The president uses FEMA to rule through executive order, meaning it's just a one-sided decree. We're doing this. I'm giving the government, you know, the government is doing this. Executive order number, blah, blah, blah. Here it is. This is what we're doing. So let's read some of the executive orders. And again, I'm not making this up. I'm not that creative. Executive order number 10990 allows the government to take over all modes of transportation. Plus, it gives them control of highways and seaports. Executive order number 10995 allows the government to seize and control the media. Insert joke there. Executive order number 10997 allows the government to take over all electrical power, gas, petroleum, fuels, and minerals. Number 10998 allows the government to seize all means of transportation, including personal cars, trucks, or vehicles of any kind, and total control over all highways, seaports, and waterways. Number 10999. And I want you to put this in context of what we're currently going through. Allows the government to take over all food resources and farms. Number 11000 allows the government to mobilize civilians into work brigades under government supervision, otherwise known as slavery. number 11001, allows the government to take over all health, education, and welfare functions. Look, I mean, a case can be made that they've already done that. Number 11002 designates the Postmaster General to operate a national registration of all persons. Number 11003 allows the government to take over all airports and aircraft, including commercial aircraft. Number 11004. This is crazy. Allows the Housing and Finance Authority to relocate communities, build new housing with public funds, designate areas to be abandoned, and establish new locations for populations. This gives them the right to round you up and put you in a FEMA camp that are very real and most definitely exist. Executive Order number 11005 allows the government to take over railroads, inland waterways, and public storage facilities. This next one. This is the last one. Number 11921 allows the Federal Emergency Preparedness Agency to develop plans to establish control over the mechanisms of production and distribution, communism, of energy sources, wages, salaries, credit, and the flow of money in U.S. financial institutions in any undefined national emergency. Again, much like the Smith Modernization Act of 2012, which legalized propaganda inside the United States to be used on Americans, the original Smith Mundt Act prohibited that. It was 1948. It said, you know, we've just come out of World War II. There was a lot of propaganda. We saw how bad that can be and how devastating that is. So we need to make sure that we don't do that anymore because, you know, the Nazi thing, and we just don't want to do that. So let's make it so, yeah, we can still use propaganda on everybody else, but not on our own people. That just, it sets you up for a disaster right now. That Smith-Mundt Act of 1948 was in effect and was fine. Wasn't set to expire. Didn't need to be renovated or revitalized or messed with at all. Then Obama came around and created the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, which changed that, which allowed there to be propaganda used in America on Americans. My point of this is this. They didn't change that law to not use it. Obama didn't make the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act legalize propaganda to not use propaganda. That's the point of it. They set it up. Now, again, and I say this every time, I'm not trying to pretend like there wasn't propaganda prior to that. There clearly was for a long, long time. But they took that extraordinary step of legalizing it because they intended to use it. Okay? And when the government has all these executive orders where they can take everything you own, they can control the flow of money in U.S. financial institutions in any, quote, undefined national emergency? What is that? Please, an undefined national emergency? I'm sorry, you're going to need to define that. If you're saying that they have that this Federal Emergency Preparedness Agency, who's run by who the fuck knows, has the ability to establish control over the mechanisms of production. We're talking about fucking communism. That is literally what they're talking about, communism. And they just keep it so open-ended in any undefined national emergency. This is dangerous, right? So, look, we've said a lot. Okay. It wasn't all Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld doing this. I mean, National Security Act of 1947 allows for the strategic relocation of industries, services, governments, and other essential economic activities, and to rationalizing the requirements for manpower, resources, and production facilities. This was 1947. Again, they've just come out of World War II. They saw how bad things can be, and they said, well, we're going to have some ability for the government to make some moves without, you know, like, if we're in an emergency, we don't have time to have a big vote on all this. We got to be able to do this in advance. I mean, I can understand it. I'm not saying I'm in favor of it. Because again, it's the wrong people in charge of this. If it was just us in charge of it, and I'd feel way more comfortable to bypass the voting and the talking and all that stuff. You know, look, if there's a legitimate emergency, time is of the essence. I understand that. I'm not idiotic. It's just that I have so little trust in the people that come up with these emergencies that I just expect that they'll be exploited and used for nefarious purposes, which of course they are, and have been, and will continue to be. So, you know, let's wrap up with this, and it actually comes from a conversation. Since I mentioned Joseph P. Farrell and Daniel List from Dark Journalist, it comes from a conversation they were having. Have you heard of the book Report from Iron Mountain? It came out in, I think, 1965, I think. Don't quote me on that. And it is sort of known to be satire or fiction, but I'm not totally sure that it is. And let me tell you why I think that. Because we know from science fiction movies, they show us predictive programming. They show us where things are going, but under the guise of it's science fiction. So everyone goes, oh, it's a cool story. You know, Minority Report, oh, it's science fiction. You go, oh, well, if it's science fiction, then it's cool. If it's reality, then it's scary. So if I were one of these guys who, you know, and the theme of the book is that there's this group that's plotting how to like rule the world or rule the country, America, under, you know, through emergencies and all this. And that one guy had a bad feeling and thought it was really horrible and then leaked this information to the writer. And then the writer wrote the book. That's the fictional thing. But what if it's not fiction? What if that's the cover story? What if the cover story is that this is fiction? What if what they're talking about was true? Top secret 3-year study that concludes that we live inside a, quote, war system. That sounds true. And that this war system is what's responsible for holding society together. I mean, you can go listen to my episode called The United States of Lockheed Martin, and I think that you would probably come away acknowledging that we currently do live in a war system that is held together by the military information terror complex. And that they invent crises like pandemics, environmental problems, wars, alien threats in order to control the public. And that America benefits from war and fear. And that's kind of the takeaway from the book. That America, you know, benefits from war and fear. And these guys are plotting to create more wars, more things to be fearful of, so that they can use that to control America. But it's fiction. It's definitely, totally, 100 million D% fiction. Doesn't sound like fiction to me. We just know that if the government is handed extraordinary powers during times of emergency, they will create emergencies in order to justify retaining those extraordinary powers. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and families. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggression. You can go to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you later.